All right, so I'm Mike, and I'll start by telling a little bit about my past, I guess. I'm not going to spend too much time there, but let you guys get a little background of me. I was born September 5th, 1992, at Miami Valley Hospital to my mother, Regina May Easter, and my father, Michael Wayne Seibel. I grew up in Springfield until I was three. My mom and my dad lived out there, and it was a bad part of town. My dad's brothers, they caused a lot of problems, and the house ended up getting shot up when I was three. So luckily, me and my family wasn't there. So at that time, my mom split up with my father, and they went their separate ways. And I went to live with my mother in Crystal Lakes, which is a part of like a New Carlisle Park Lane. That Midway, that whole area. That's where I grew up most of my life. I went to Tecumseh High School and all those, that the Tecumseh School District. I'd say the farthest that I can go back that I can really remember anything happened is one of the biggest traumatic things that happened to me is when I was 7 years old, I was molested. And From that point on, I didn't know how to deal with my feelings. I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. I didn't know how to deal with anything in life. And, it weighed heavy on me. And the way my father reacted, because my father came home, and it was somebody that he knew. And my father came home, and the guy ran off and was never seen again. And my dad blew up on, took it out on me when I was, I was to never talk about it. So I didn't talk about this. First time I ever talked about this was about a year ago when I got into the Christopher House the first time. It was the first time I ever talked about it. So when I was growing up, I was kind of always a rebellious kid. I went along. I didn't like to follow rules. My mom and stuff, she was divorced all the way up till I was 13. And she met my stepfather, but so that whole time I got away with a lot of stuff, you know. I was home late every night. I pretty much did what I wanted to do because there was no male figure, you know. And I would go to my dad's on the weekends, and he would punish me for things I did at my mom's through the week. So my outlook on men I didn't have a lot of trust towards men, you know, because the way my father treated me, what happened when I was seven, and it's just started to build this hate, this non-trust I had towards men and towards people in general. I don't know. When I was 13 is when I hit a joint for the first time, and I had found something that made me not feel, and that was that was something that. I don't know. That it was something that drawed me to that, because that's my whole life. I was trying to find something, because I was taught that you don't talk about feelings, you don't talk about emotions, you know. And I remember in fifth grade, I got beat up by a guy that was a lot smaller than me. When I went home, my dad made sure that I wasn't afraid to. You know, he started teaching me how to fight and things like that. So I started taking out a lot of things. I started getting real violent, and I grew up in a Pentecostal church, which, you know, my aunts used to speak tongues and stuff like that, and it scared me away for a long time because I didn't understand. I didn't understand any of that. So my mom didn't go to church. My dad did. And he made me go up until I was 13, and I could kind of make my own decision on whether I wanted to go or not, and I quit going. And and that was the same year that I got introduced to drugs. And by the time I was 14, I'd done cocaine, and drank all before I turned 14. And my mother and my stepfather, they used to drink and smoke weed and things like that. But when they found out that I was that I was doing it. They quit, you know, cold turkey, and they haven't touched a drink or a drug since, and they changed their lives around. And so, you know, my mom and my stepfather, you know, they were great role models for me. I just chose not to pay attention, and I chose to go my own way. My best friend that was at the time, he was my next door neighbor. He was a rapper, you know, music in the music industry, whatever you want to call it. And he was a few years older than me, so I was hanging out with a lot of older kids. And you know, I just wanted to feel a part of, because I never felt like I was a part of anything in my life. And I finally felt, you know, because I did anything these guys told me to do, you know, they I felt a part of. They let me hang out with them, and I don't know. It was just that's when things really just slowly started to go downhill. And when I got old enough, like, I'd always believed in God and things like that. But when things really started to get bad, and they started getting bad when I was 16, and I got my license, and my mom bought me a car, and I was able to go, I was pretty much able to do whatever I wanted to do. I was out all night, I was out on the weekends, I was lying. You know, I started lying. I've been bound by lies up all the way up till about 3 months ago. I've been tied down by lies and just tied down by myself. You know, I've been in a dark place since I was 13. And when I was when I was 16, I had my first girlfriend, and that was when. All up to that point, I had been, I was always made fun of. I was a real heavy set kid all the way through middle school and things like that. So I had got made fun of a lot. And I started playing sports going my seventh grade year. I started playing football and wrestling, and I lost a bunch of weight, and I started, you know, lifting weights and things like that. And got a girlfriend for the first time in my eighth grade year. And I had built up a hatred towards. I was so full of hate and things just from, because I didn't know how to deal with anything, man. And when I got in a relationship, and it obviously wasn't healthy. It was all based on sin and sex and things like that. It was completely unhealthy, and everything came crashing down. You know, with that relationship and with any other relationship I've had with anybody. Friends, I didn't have any good friends. I didn't have anything, because I didn't know how to, you know, I didn't know how to have friends. I didn't know how to have, I had a lot of acquaintances, and I bounced around a lot. When I was 19, or when I was 18, I moved out. I got emancipated from my mom, and I thought I was, you know, the coolest kid in school, because I was a senior. I could sign myself out of school. I missed like 90 something days my senior year, and still graduated. I was at Springfield Clark CTC. I don't know how I graduated, but I did. After that, I moved out of my mom's house, and I got an apartment in Fairborn, Avalon Place. It was my first time ever being on my own. I landed this really good job at a printing service company, and I was making really good money. By the time I was 19, I was making $17-something an hour. And I fell and hurt my back, and I had back surgery. I had a back surgery when I was 19 years old. And when I got out of there, you know, the friends that I was hanging around with at the time, they're like, you know, man, you have any idea what you got, man? Like, you can go get anything you want. So I did what they told me to do, and I told the doctors what they needed to hear. Because after I had the surgery, I felt fine, but I just wanted, you know, everybody was saying that I could make all this money. So I went and jumped through all the hoops and eventually got put on prescription painkillers. And I found this doc. I was going to this doctor in Vandalia, and I was 19 years old. She had me on 50 milligram fentanyl patches and Percocets and Xanax and all these things. And you know, because I had been looking for something my whole life to help deal with my feelings and things like that, that helped. And that's when things really went downhill. After that, it was 6 months later, I lost that job because I failed a drug test. Got my insurance cut off, and I got introduced to, I went through withdrawals for the first time and got introduced to heroin. And the next 4 years, I was in complete darkness. And through this whole time, like, I had turned my back on God this whole time. You know, I went as far as making up my own God to fit my life. You know, that God, that it was okay for me to do the things I was doing. And I had no conscience. I was talking to Pastor Josh about this earlier. Like, I had no conscience. I was just in such a dark place. I knew right from wrong, but I didn't care, you know. I didn't care who I was hurting. My daughter was born, I'll jump back a little bit. My daughter was born October 23rd, 2014. And this is when I really knew I thought I was unsavable. I thought that there was nothing in this world that could ever bring me back. When my daughter was born, I was holding her in my arms, and I looked down at her, and I swore, and I meant it. Like, I meant every word to come out of my mouth. I swore to her that I would never do drugs again, that I would never do heroin again, that I would never do these things again. And 6 hours later, when she fell asleep and I started getting a little sick, I went out and got high again. And, you know, that was, to me, that was when things really fell off for me. Like, I thought I was unsavable. I thought things really got dark. I hated everybody, including God. I pointed the finger at everybody but myself. And I was miserable. I was in a really, really dark place. And I remember at the end of my run, when I got introduced to recovery for the first time, my first bottom, I guess you could say, I was sitting on a mattress in this upstairs of this abandoned house, and there was animal crap all around me. Like, it was just I was looking up crying, and I just asked God to help me. I was on Facebook, and my cousin sent me a message and asked me how I was doing. And I know that he went through treatment, and he had 9 years sober. So I reached out to him, and he took me here in Xenia and took me to TCN. And that's when I got introduced to this, you know, the recovery scene. I didn't found God yet, but I got introduced to the recovery scene, which, you know, it, I got my assessment done, and I got in the Christopher House 4 days later. It was an experience, you know, when things, I heard throughout this whole thing that you had to find a higher power, you know, the first time I was in treatment. And I would tell myself that I had a higher power, that a higher power was God. And I claimed that, you know, I was a believer in God. I claimed that all this, but inside, in all honesty, I had a lot of doubt because I didn't. You know, all I knew was what I had seen. I seen that, you know, even my daughter being born, I couldn't quit. I just couldn't do these things, and all the blasphemy and all the things that I said to God and blamed Him for. I just never thought that I could ever be forgiven, so I never seeked Him out. So I graduated treatment the first time. I never found God in there the first time, and I never had any, wasn't working any kind of a program. The only thing I did was I was abstinent from drugs for the 65 days I was in there, and that was it. And when I walked out the front doors, I got high within a week. I was getting high. And they gave me a couple chances to bounce back from it, and I just kept getting worse and worse, so they kicked me out, and I became homeless again. And up to this point, you know, me and my daughter's mom, Vanessa, we had Jordan. This is my daughter up until a year, and then after about a year, my mom took custody. So, because I got honest and told my mom how bad our situation was, and she got her out. So I'm homeless through this whole period. And so I got into the Christopher House. I get out, you know, get all this opportunity in front of me, and I end up getting high and I become homeless again. And I go back out for about 5 months, and I grew up. I got the courage. I don't know what it was. I got the courage to go in and to go. I talked to Nate, and he got me in there in a day. Again, he got. So after that, that's when I came here for the first time. I came here for the first time a week. After my 2 weeks of being in there, you level up in 2 weeks. So after my first 2 weeks in there, I came here. But before that, I remember the first time I ever got honest with myself and God and another human being. I was sitting in group one day, and my dad's side of the family, there's a brain disease that runs really rampant, and it's called Huntington's, and it's a terminal brain disease. It's very brutal, and my dad has it. And when I got backed into a corner, I found out my family was finding out how bad my addiction was and how bad off I was. I lied and I told them all that I had the same disease my father has, and that lie itself had tied me down for so long. Like I thought I was going to take it to my grave. And you know, there's like a chain reaction when people start to do the right things, and somebody in that group that day got honest about something, and it gave me it was on the tip of my tongue to start sharing, and I couldn't do it. And I looked up and I asked God to give me, just to help me get this out of me, give me strength. And it was the first time that I had evidence of God giving me strength. And I walked straight out of the upstairs in the group and walked right into Nate's office, and I just sat down and I started crying, and I spilled it all out. And I couldn't explain it. It was just like, oh yeah, I can't explain it. It was God giving me what I asked for. He gave me the strength to do it. And then later on that day, it was visitation days, and my parents were coming for visits. And I asked God to help me get it out, because if I didn't keep this ball rolling in that direction, then I know myself better than anyone. Then I'm just gonna fall right back. So I asked them the strength to give me the courage to tell them. So I sat down with them, and one of my counselors sat beside me and was there for support. And I sat down and told them that it was a lie. You know, that I lied to them about that. And they told me that they had knew the whole time. They told me that they knew that there was, that I lied about everything else. They just wanted me to come and tell them, you know. And it took, that in itself took the weight of, like a weight of the world off my shoulders. Because I was tied down by that one lie. I had been getting high over that one lie my whole life. You know, when I was using, because it was like, you know, that's something big. It's, you know, it's them telling them I told them I got a terminal brain disease, you know. And in the long run, it ended up messing with me, because, you know, I could never go get tested for it. You know, it's a hereditary disease. So I felt alone, and I could never have the support of my family and friends, because I told them I already did. So I was alone. And for once, I just had that relief off my chest, and it was something I couldn't explain. And then about a week later is when I came here. I came here, and I remember sitting right around here, and I was listening to what God and Jesus had done in people's lives, and I was just like, man, I wanted that so bad. You know what I mean? I just wanted whatever everybody in this room had, and I was so scared. And I remember when Pastor Josh was asked people to come to step forward and. To step forward and tell them, like, if you wanted to give your life to Christ, like, I would want to step forward so bad. Like, I would want to, but I couldn't do it. Nothing, like, I couldn't take that step forward. And I remember that feeling. So one day, I remember, it was while everybody was eating. I asked God for the courage to go talk to Josh, and I walked up there and I asked Josh. I told him I wanted to give my life back to Christ, but I don't understand how God could forgive me. I don't understand how He can forgive me. I don't understand why, you know, the things I did, the things, you know, everything I've said, I don't understand. And he sat down and he explained some things to me. And it was, I think the one, the what, 3:16, John 3:16, that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever shall believe in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. Amen. And that was the first verse I memorized, and it was it gave me hope, because I believed then that, like, you know, if God can give God let his Son die on the cross for everybody and sins in the world, then I mean I can, and you know what I mean, I understood a little bit more than I did. And that day that I gave my life to Christ, things changed for me. And all, you know, 95% of it was internally. I felt like my conscience was renewed. Like, this whole time in active addiction and things like that, I didn't care about hurting people. I hurt people all the time. I'd stolen from everybody I loved, my mother, my father, my grandparents, I had hurt everybody around me, you know. And I was at a point where, like, I knew that no human being on this earth could save me, because, you know, I looked at my daughter in the eyes when she was born and told her that I was never going to use again, and I did that day. So I knew that there was no human that could save me, and I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die, and I didn't want my mother to have to explain that to my daughter, that, you know, I didn't love her enough to stop, or that I didn't want to live like that anymore, and I didn't want to be a coward and take my life, because at one point I did not want to live anymore. When I was at my lowest, I didn't want to live. And the day I got saved, it was like this verse, John 8:12. Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying that I am the light of the world. That he who followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. That was another verse that stuck out to me immediately, because I had been, like, up to this point, I felt like I had been walking in darkness this whole time. Like, there was nothing that, I was miserable. There was no feelings, no emotions. There was nothing. I had shut myself off from everything in the world, and I was just an evil, mean person. And I hated everything and everybody around me. And it was, when I got saved, I felt really renewed. You know, it was. And it was because when I did it, I meant it. You know what I mean? I'd made a lot of prayers before in the past of, you know, get me out of this. You know, I hear it all the time that, you know, get me out of this, I'll never do it again, or this or that. But, like, that was the first time I did something and I really truly meant it, and I believed wholeheartedly that God was the only person, the only one that could save me. And when I gave my life to Christ and I knew that and I meant that, and I knew that wholeheartedly, then I felt, you know, that forgiveness, you know, I felt forgiveness over me, and it was like my conscience had been renewed. And throughout the next month or so, and while I was in treatment, you know, I started this 1+1=2 discipleship book, and it was the first time I'd ever been committed to, got committed to anything. And up to this point in my life, I'd last a day or two, and then I'd give up on something, and it would start something new. I never finished anything. I never did anything. Never stayed committed to myself. And I'm in week 8 now of this 1+1 discipleship. You know, I read a chapter a day, every day. I'm almost done with Matthew. But while I was in treatment, and everybody is watching me, you know, I get on my knees every night and I prayed every night, and every morning I got on my knees and I prayed every morning. I started praying. Something I've never done is when at night in their groups, where we circle up and we say the Serenity Prayer. But before we would do that, I said a prayer. Like, I don't know why, just something came across me, and I said a prayer for the first time in a group of people, and prayed for my brothers in the Christopher House. And after that, one of the brothers in there came up to me. It was a Saturday night, and I was playing cards or dominoes or something. And this brother comes up to me, and he had been laying down for about an hour now. Comes up, he's like, "Man," he's like, "I don't know how to pray." He's like, "Will you come show me?" And you know, keep in mind, I've been saved for about a week and a half now, and somebody's coming up to me asking me to show him how to pray. And man, that gave me goosebumps. I got emotional, and I went in there, and I put my hand on his back, and we got on our knees beside my bed, and I prayed. And, you know, he was emotional. I got emotional. Like, it was just a very powerful moment for me. And I continued to keep my commitment, and things just started happening. God has put people in my life. A week when I graduated treatment, I've been coming to Lighthouse. Jacob, this guy sitting right here, had been picking me up every Friday, bringing me to the Lighthouse. And it was the first time we met. You know, we'd just been talking and things like that. The week before I got out, he gave me the study Bible, and it was a blessing, because I had a hard time understanding some of the things I would read, and I'd actually talked to Pastor Josh about it, you know, saying that I probably needed to get one so that I could help me out. And then that Friday, Jacob brings this and says, "Oh, God put it on my heart to give you this one. I don't need it. It's collecting dust." And I'm just like, okay. You know, it was just, all this evidence started rolling in, because I don't know, like, I'm a person that, like, I like to see evidence. I like evidence, you know what I mean? And it's been around me my whole life, and it's been around me. It's around me in this room. My eyes were closed. They weren't open, and it felt like God opened them up for me so that I could see all this stuff that was going on around me. And then a week after I got out of treatment, I got a call. I was at the Fairborn Against Heroin block party, and I get a call from Jacob, and a week before I was talking about, he asked me if I had a car and license and stuff like that, and I told him I had a license and things like that. But he called, and he blessed me with a vehicle, and just. You know, I got so emotional because I know I don't deserve these things, you know. I know I don't deserve it, and I'm not worthy of it, but in my eyes, God's got a purpose for it, because he put it on his heart, and he told me that. He's like, you know, God blessed me with a house, so, you know. And and Josh said something to me one time that, you know, you keep what you give away, kind of, it's around, you know, along those lines. And so all these blessings keep coming in, and I was sleeping on a couch for the first 2.5 weeks when I got out of treatment. And then somebody called me one day and said that I should go put an application in a CAP. So I did that, and I ended up getting the only one bedroom apartment up there. So it's like all these things. I'm getting all this evidence, you know, that God is working in my life, and it's because I'm seeking Him out, you know, and I'm not confused about that today. I totally believe in my heart and soul that if I wasn't seeking Him out and His book and staying committed to Him, and, you know, staying committed to and I'm not perfect. Don't get me wrong. I make mistakes every day. I'm new to this, you know. I've got 81 days sober today, and so all this is very, very, very new to me. The only thing I can say is that the evidence is all around me, and things didn't start changing until I gave my life to Christ, until I got baptized, until I, you know, start suiting up and showing up to church on Sundays, on Fridays. You know, when somebody asks me to do something, I do it. I don't, you know, I just show up, you know, and I do what I'm saying I'm going to do, and things are starting to change for me. You know, I've never had anything happen to me. Just in the last month, nothing has happened to me the way that, you know, my whole life and things that's happened in the last month. I got an interview Monday for a decent job starts early and gets off early, so it works with my recovery schedule and everything else. And there's a couple other verses here I wanted to share. John 15:12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. I've never loved anybody in my life. I didn't love myself. And you know, I could have to say that that's definitely something. Like, I don't know, I'm learning to love. I couldn't say that I know what love is at this point. I know, I do know what some type of love is, but loving people that, you know, that I don't like or something like that, like for something that happened. Last night I went and seen my daughter's mom, and her ex-boyfriend showed up, and it was like my first instinct was to, like, when I was getting driving home, my first instinct was as I started turning around, you know, like, I'm going to go find this guy. And while I'm doing that, I call her back, and I'm like, you know what, just pray for him. He needs help. And for me, that's huge growth for me, because I ought have been out there for the next 5-6 hours looking for him, you know. And so for me, that was growth. And I could honestly say that deep down in my heart that I truly wanted help for him, because I wasn't no different. I was absolutely no different than he was, and then he is, you know. And it was an experience, and I didn't really recognize it until I was in here at 5 o'clock talking to Josh, and I kind of looked back at it. And then another verse is James 1:12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. There's temptation all over. There's every day I deal with temptations. Without God in my life, there wouldn't have been no enduring nothing. It would have just been, if the temptation popped up, I was in the middle of it. But today I have a strength that I can't explain. I'm stronger than I've ever been in my life. I can say no to something that I truly don't want, because I don't care about what people. I don't care as much as what other humans think about, other people think about me, because in the end it don't matter. You know, it matters what God thinks of me. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, then more temptations, more tribulations are going to come my way. And you know, just because things have been going really good, you know, God's going to, things are going to come up that's going to make me appreciate it if I continue to do it, you know. And I believe that. And then the last one I want to share is Matthew 5:16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. I want to say that, like, everything that's happened to me since I've been out of treatment, since I've gave my life to Christ, it has absolutely nothing to do with me. I've never been strong enough to do anything on my own. I've never been strong enough to stop doing drugs. I've never been strong enough to stand up in front of people and talk. I've never been strong enough to do anything that I have done in the last, you know, couple months. And I got to give that all to God, you know. That's why that verse stood out to me. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing what he wants if I'm not sharing what he's doing for me. And giving it all to him, because it is him. It has absolutely nothing to do with me. So that's pretty much how I've got 81 days sober. And that's a little bit of, you know, it's all because of God. And that's pretty much it.